The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks.
Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day. And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's a Wednesday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined, as always, by my esteemed colleague, the Professor Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, we're going to discuss the role of sound bites and how we try to avoid getting bitten. Has a change in the thermostat in Miami finally led to the heat getting turned up? And the play of the day is going to go at happy hours on the Las Vegas time. So go ahead and fix yourself a French 75, but make sure you do it the right way.
Dave, first take for a Wednesday, obviously lots of exciting hoops action last night. What's your first take from something you saw last night?
You know, something we probably should get into a postmortem at some point, but boy, is Steve Nash still good. Now, gets the game-winning basket for the Suns last night, but at the age of 38, he's leading the NBA in assists, and when you break it down per minute played, by a wide margin. Remember, he's leading the NBA in assists despite playing 4 or 5 minutes less per game than most of the other guys at the top of that category. If you prorate those assists over 48 minutes, 2.2, better than anybody else. Also number 5 in the NBA in shooting percentage, but by far and away number 1 amongst guards. Now think about this. It's hard to get a lot of assists with this Phoenix team right now. You don't have a lot of finishers on that roster. Look at that shooting percentage at the age of 38. Guys just having a tremendous season. We've been a step slow on recognizing it because we didn't anticipate it, but hey, happy birthday. Nice fitting ending to that game last night. A lot of action yesterday, on and off the court. I think you're going to talk about something, though, that happened off the court.
We got to. We have to talk about this Memphis to the Big East, which is the latest announcement today in this ever-emerging culture of, okay, let's make sure the BCS conferences have enough team to retain their eligibility, and let's hose over the Conference USAs and the Mountain West of the world. And when does the madness end, frankly? I could rant about the NCAA for hours. I've done it before on this show. But just look at this. In the Big East, okay, we're looking now, Memphis, who, they have the worst, maybe the worst football program in all of Division I.
But they are east of the Mississippi River.
Yeah, you can make
it's east.
Well, you can make a case for New Mexico having a worse team than Memphis. But it certainly may, at best, 119 out of 120 teams, an embarrassment of a football program. A football program that has nothing to sell except for that, oh, guess what? Now if we win the conference, we get to go to a BCS bowl game. But you have Memphis. Now we have Central Florida in the Big East. Houston, wrong side of the Mississippi in the Big East. SMU, wrong side of the Mississippi in the Big East. Navy, what kind of a fit is that in the Big East? San Diego State and Boise all moving to the Big East. When I came out to Vegas, of the teams that were in the Big East at that time, there's one that remains, that team being Rutgers, at least for football. One team, the conference name stays the same, the BCS automatic bid stays the same, and all the smaller conferences get holds. It's ridiculous. I don't even know what to say about it other than that I really hope they get all of 3,000 fans for the Memphis home games in football next year.
That might be an increase.
I would say that's what they were getting for a good handful of games this year, and that'll really drive up those TV revenues. Well done, BCS. Well done, NCAA. Well done, Big East. You've taken college football and college basketball and made them appreciably worse for the fans. As betters, however, we're going to be able to take advantage, I would expect. All right, let's start today's show by going through some of the viewer mail, because, boy, these letters have been piling up. And we're going to start with this one from Matthew. Matthew writes, "Just recently, due to your show and a 60-minute spot I saw in Billy Walters, I've begun to try and read the local reports on teams and what the players and coaches are saying. What are some of the signs you guys look for when doing research in this area? Thanks. I'm a big fan. Dave, you want to answer Matthew's question?
Yeah, we're looking for things that pertain precisely to why a team is playing poorly or well. Look at those little subtle things in terms of personnel, in terms of strategies. Use yesterday's show as a good example. We've had Matt Painter comments about the fact that his team was struggling so bad offensively, it was impacting their energy level in other ways. You saw them just melt down at the end against Indiana on Saturday. When you miss shots, it looks like an uphill battle to win games. What happens against Ohio State last night? They make shots early, and look at how that energy came right back up. We were letting Painter explain to us why the rebounding counts were off, why the defense was off. It was the poor shooting that impacted the energy everywhere. So you're looking for things like that. Most of all, though, you want to find coaches that you can trust because there's a lot of smoke being blown out there. One of our favorites, and we've used his quotes on this show before, Bob Huggins at West Virginia, what 99.9% of what he says is true and is real. It'll sound harsh, it'll sound blunt, but we can believe it and we can use it. There are a lot of other coaches, they're just going to blow smoke out there all the time. John Calipari, when he's assessing an opponent coming in, not going to believe a word of it because Calipari, who's got the best team in the country, would lead you to believe his team is the underdog in every game that they play. Got to be careful with that. So look for guys that show over time you can trust what they're saying. And there's going to come a point where you'll know, hey, he's blowing smoke.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I like to look for, I guess there's three different things that I tend to look for in these reading the local papers, trying to get the feel of where a team is at going to a ball game. One, I'm looking for practice information. Are they practicing hard? Are they coming off a particularly good or particularly bad practice? Those coaches' quotes and some of the reports from the beat writers tend to be pretty good in that area. Another thing I'm looking for is injury information. The betting markets tend to react to injury information, good or bad, relatively late. If you're ahead of the game because you've read the local papers and know who's likely to play or who's not likely to play, that can definitely give you an edge in terms of when to make your particular wager on whatever side you choose. And last but not least, you know, one of the things that Dave was talking about in terms of the quotes and the coaches' quotes, I like to look for quotes from some of the leaders on the team. Are these guys coming together or is the team fracturing? Off a series of bad performances, is this a step-up game or is it a team that's pretty much beaten down? And you can find some of those good quotes when you do your homework and peruse the local reports.
Got another good letter that came in, this one from Sean, and this is referring more towards in-game betting, something, of course, you could do in Las Vegas at the Cantor Books and at several places offshore these days. Sean's asking us this. As of late, I've been finding myself on the low spreads, playing the dogs home or away, and grabbing the money line. Then all I'm watching for is the dog to grab the lead so that I can hedge my bet and make money either way. Do you think over time you will be up in money, or is it a short time winning with no success for the future?
You know, that's a really good question, Sean, and thanks for asking and sending it in. And it really isn't a bad strategy when we talk about in-game wagering ideas, in-game wagering solutions. Basically, your no-lose position is, I got Team A at a plus price, I got Team B at a plus price, however the game ends, I'm happy. You're going to grind out a nice profit if you can find those short dogs that take a lead and obviously the in-game number switches, unless you get both teams at plus points or both teams at plus prices on the money line. Good long-term strategy, something that if you're paying attention throughout the course of a game, you can really take advantage of. However, it's not something that I like to do blindly. And it's certainly not something that I like to do on a consistent basis when I'm not watching the game. Because when you're watching, boy, you can really get all these body language clues. Just look at the game that we had, not last night, the night before, with Portland and Oklahoma City. When the Thunder were able to tie the game at the end of regulation on a disputed goaltending call, if you watch the body language of those two teams following that particular play, you don't even need to watch the overtime. OKC, fist pumping, excited, energized. Portland, looking down. How do we blow this? What's going on here? It really was a night and day difference between the two teams' body language, and that showed up on the floor in the overtime session. So it's a good idea, but you can't do it blindly. You really have to pick and choose your spots.
By the way, if you haven't followed, it's not even a disputed goaltending call anymore. The NBA league office issued a statement. Yeah, the officials blew the call. One other thing to keep in mind on this in running, have your little chart with the free throw percentages by you. You know, if your underdog has the lead and is a good free throw shooting team, you might want to stay with your bet. If they're a bad free throw shooting team, better chance that it might get away. Also want to duck in a quick one here from Patrick. We believe in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Asking about getting on the Pittsburgh bandwagon against South Florida tonight. Yeah, you could still do that, but the time to do that was earlier in the day. You talked about Pittsburgh being -3. There were 1.5s out there yesterday. Could have done even 2s this morning. Yeah, Pitt makes sense to stay on them as they get that resurgence going. And South Florida, in a close game, doesn't have that confidence to always finish. But at -3, the best of the value has already gotten away.
Keep those questions coming in, guys. Great questions today. We've got great questions that'll fill up a show, or fill up our shows throughout the course of the rest of the week. But we really appreciate those emails, and we want to continue to answer them on air on a daily basis. Send them in sportsday@covers.com. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter and ask us, tweet us questions at Vegas Sports Day. And you can get involved in the community. There are so many bettors just like you out there in active threads and discussions. Really interesting stuff. Check it out, covers.com/postingforum.
Up next, you could win an NBA championship this year with guys who might not be playing today. We're going to clear that all up for you in our Insider Six-Pack. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
This is David Ivey for Pub Crawl. It's funny because David from... You should just leave it on. Hi, I'm David Ivey from Pub Crawl, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And scene.
Glug, 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 glug. Oh, first I gotta pop the top. Insider Six Pack up now. Let's start with the Knicks-Wizards for this evening. And isn't it kind of fitting that the Knicks may have played arguably their best game of the year, certainly one of their best games of the season, on Monday night, an 11-point win over Utah. And who wasn't in the lineup for the Knicks that night? Amari Stoudemire and Carmelo Anthony, the two superstars who are supposed to be revitalizing basketball at Madison Square Garden in New York. But keep in mind that results like that are often aided by the fact that the opposing team was preparing to face a very different opponent than the one they actually saw on the floor. Did Utah have a scouting report on Steve Novak, who scored 19 points in just over 17 minutes of action, knocking down 5 3-pointers? What about the 28 points and 8 assists from Jeremy Lin? You know, a guy who's come out of absolutely nowhere in the last two games to suddenly spark the Knicks to a couple of victories. There's also that natural tendency for opposing teams to let down when the key players are missing from the other side. We see that all the time in the NBA. And that may well be the case again tonight. You know, Amari Stoudemire has not rejoined the team yet following the untimely death of his brother on Monday. Anthony going to miss at least the next week with a strained groin, which is never any fun. Now the question, though, is Washington working hard enough these days to take any sort of advantage? Monday's win over Toronto showed really no signs that the Wizards were working hard. They blew an 18-point lead in the final 15 minutes of regulation in that ballgame. Stole one in overtime, but it certainly wasn't anything that makes you think that Washington's about to turn their season around. Missing from that game for the Wizards, of course, is the guy they should have amnestied, Rashard Lewis. He's out with a knee injury. He's not expected to be available tonight either. But frankly, his availability issues over the course of the next couple of weeks may be more about, is he available for someone to take him away from Washington? Because the Wizards are looking to deal him. Not sure if they can find anyone to pick up his salary. But 8.5 points per game on career low, 39.1% shooting. Rashard Lewis, not in very good form.
Let's talk Clippers, a team that's been good to our pockets here on Vegas Sports Day. Suffered a crushing blow the other night. Chauncey Billups tears his Achilles. He's going to be out for the remainder of the season. Possibly a career ender for him. He's trying to say, no, I'll be back next year. This is a big blow for this team, though. He was shooting at 38.4% from three-point range, more than twice as many assists as turnovers. the guy who brought you that combination of being able to run the show at point guard, but also had the savvy and the toughness to be able to guard the number twos for opposing teams. Here's the problem. They don't have another number two on the entire roster. Randy Foy is going to start tonight. He's more of a natural point guard. Mo Williams will have to play the number two a little bit. So here's the decision the Clippers are going to have to make. We're going to watch this closely in terms of adjusting for future books. Kenyon Martin's going to be on the court pretty soon. That's excellent front court depth. Chris Paul, you can win an NBA championship with. You've got to go out and get another number two if you believe you're a serious contender. Yeah, they can still do pretty well in the Western Conference. It's outside of Kobe Bryant. There are not a lot of great twos in the West. But if you want to make that deep run into the playoffs, they're going to have to add another player. That Billups loss, that's a big one.
It took a while for the line to go up on tonight's Bulls-Hornets matchup because the back issues for Derrick Rose continue to surface. And it looks like this may be something we're going to have to deal with on a regular basis in the days and weeks to come. Rose has tried to downplay his back injury, but it's clearly bothering him. Here's his quote following his last game. Quote, just a back spasm. It's nothing to worry about. It was tight the whole game. Tonight was pretty rough. It's just something where I've got to get a massage and get it stretched right away, and hopefully it'll be gone. Rose didn't practice yesterday. None of the Bulls practiced yesterday, which makes it tougher for Chicago to build chemistry around the other pieces if Derrick Rose is not able to go tonight. Now, Tom Thibodeau clearly faces a tough challenge ahead. He's got to get enough wins to secure a home court advantage in the Eastern Conference while also spacing out the playing time for Rose so that he can be ready for an extended playoff run. At least Chicago has a fairly easy go of it this evening against New Orleans. I mean, the Hornets are an absolute mess right now. They do expect their starting point guard, Jarrett Jack, back on the floor this evening, but Carl Landry is going to be out until after the All-Star break. Jason Smith also not expected to play, and that leaves that Hornets front court, even with Chris Kaman back, still very, very thin.
Denver was one of the most intriguing teams at the NBA at the start of the season because they had the most depth and the ability to interchange to take advantage of matchups based on who the opponent was. That depth is gone right now. When they took the court against Houston on Monday night, there was no Aaron Aflalo, Hilario Nene, Timothy Mozgov, Corey Brewer, and then in the game, Danilo Gallinari has been having a super season, stress fracture in his foot. He's going to be out for a while. Big changes now for the Nuggets. They didn't have a practice yesterday. George Karl saying that if I had asked for one, there might have been a mutiny. But here's Karl talking about his team, and we need to understand exactly what he's saying so we make our own adjustments. The injuries take away our strength because our strength is playing a lot of guys, seeing who's playing well and fitting them into the personality of the game. See, the Denver key is that they had a lot of pieces, not necessarily that they were great pieces. So we got to be a little bit careful here. Yeah, tonight, Aflalo and Nene are going to be back. But you know what? Individually, this is an average team. It's the depth that created that high power rating. We got to be a little bit careful with the Nuggets. We may have to downgrade them even more than the individual components might lead you to.
Sure. I mean, if you watch the Rockets beat Denver at the Pepsi Center the other night, Houston was a better team on the floor, and Denver was a 7.5-point favorite in that ballgame. Let's talk about Marshall. And boy, it's been a really tough couple of days for the Thundering Herd. You know, they lost a key Conference USA road game at Tulsa on Saturday. Flying home early Sunday, well, the plane experienced mechanical problems, was forced to land in Memphis. And then the team spent basically all of the day on Sunday trying to find a way home from Memphis. They couldn't get an alternate flight. They couldn't charter a bus. They ended up having to rent 6 vans and drive the 550 miles back to Huntington with head coach Tom Herrien actually driving one of those 6 vans instead of, oh, I don't know, breaking down game film or some of the other stuff he's supposed to be doing following a loss. Then things got worse for Marshall. The father of DeAndre Kane passed away yesterday in his hometown of Pittsburgh. Worth noting, the elder Kane played on a Lamar University team that made the NCAA Sweet 16 back in 1980. And frankly, his son's following in his footsteps, leading Marshall in scoring 16.2 points per game, 5.7 boards, 3.5 assists. He did not make the trip to Orlando with the team for tonight's game.
But like a promising season at Seton Hall has been getting turned inside out. 6 losses in a row, going from being a prime contender to get into the NCAA tournament to being a bubble team. maybe hit rock bottom at Connecticut on Saturday. They had to play without Herb Pope. And if you remember an earlier postmortem, we talked about how important he's been for that team. Guy averages a double-double. It was a rock bottom game. 26 of the 58 shots they took were from three-point range. Didn't have a block shot in the game. Got out-rebounded by 11. Got so frustrating that at the time, we thought Kevin Willard, the coach, was getting thrown out of the game because his own players were bothering him. Turns out later, no. Willard saw some things from the officials that were really bothersome. Now, this is going to probably ding him in the pocket a little bit, but if this is true, let's take this quote. There might be something we will follow up on in watching this in the days ahead. He says, I don't mind getting blown out. I do have an issue when the refs enjoy the blowout, and I don't think they should be smiling or enjoying one team getting their butt kicked. Might get fined a little bit by the league office for making that statement, but we don't have the game film. Would love to go back and see it and see the actions of those officials just to see if maybe there was something going on. Anyway, at least tonight, they do get a good chance to rebound. They're playing Rutgers, a team that'll bring more passion out of them than any other opponent. Got a couple of kids, former high school teammates, who are going head-to-head in that game tonight. Big key, though, Herb Pope, who didn't even make the trip to Connecticut because of a rib injury, he's back on the court this evening.
Up next, it's time to take a look at a loaded NBA board for tonight when Money Time begins.
Hey, I'm Al Mann. Is that how you get them to do that all the time? Just sit there and be an ass. Is that it? Hey, I'm Al. Hey, I'm Al Mancini at Top of the Food Chain. You are watching the Vegas Video Network. We got big forks, big spoons. I got a big mouth. I got no guests.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Okay, guys. It's money time. This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers a number. Let's go to Orlando, where tonight the Miami Heat, 3.5-point road favorites against this, what do we call the Magic? Mercurial, up and down, high and low. Certainly not a team that has been consistently playing good basketball this year. They've had their moments, but Orlando's bad moments have been, certainly against good teams, have been far more than their good moments against good teams. Now, you know, I mean, we can give lots of references out there for Stan Van Gundy being a magician this season. And, you know, I don't disagree with that, frankly. You know, he's finally going to get Jameer Nelson back, and then boom, he's got to deal with issues with Big Baby Davis, who apparently threw a temper tantrum and was, you know, the undisclosed reasons he was suspended for a game. And then Hedo Turkoglu, 0 for 6 on the floor, didn't score, only 2 rebounds. He wasn't allowed in practice yesterday. There's definitely issues going on behind the scenes right now in Orlando.
The flip side of this equation is the interesting one. We had talked on the show a few times about how bad Miami had been in the fourth quarter through the first stages of the season. That's starting to turn around now, including a couple of dynamic fourth quarters, one against Philadelphia Friday, another dynamic one against Toronto last night. Part of it is coming down to what looks like, once and for all, their endgame rotation. Udonis Haslem and Mike Miller starting to get a lot more time on the court. It's interesting the way the ball moves when these guys play, the size they have on defense. But you know the best way to look at it? Let's take a look at the plus-minus impact of Miller and Haslem when they've been on the court. Over the last three games, Haslam's been on the floor for 76 minutes and 45 seconds. Miami's a plus 44 in that time. That means if you prorate it, that's a 27.5-point advantage over a full game. Miller, plus 38 points in 68-30. That's 26.5 points if you prorate that over a full game. That is awfully, awfully good production. Can this work at crunch time? Yeah, you know what it allows you to do is play without a point guard. It's the biggest weakness. They don't have a natural one, but you have enough passers out there that it works. Miller gives them that spot-up shooter that they need that they don't necessarily have at other times of the game. The only issue they may have in terms of tonight's particular game, if it's a close game late, Can you let Haslam, who's more of a power forward than a center, can you let him guard Dwight Howard? But yeah, the chemistry of this bunch at the end game has been real interesting to see them develop.
So Miami, second night of back-to-backs. They haven't been particularly good in this role this season, just 2-5 ATS playing without rest. But a couple of advantages that certainly add up for the Heat here. Number one in offense compared to number 16 for Orlando. We look at the rankings of points per 100 possessions. Rebounding, Miami number 4. The Magic, even with Dwight Howard, just number 12 in mediocre territory NBA-wise. And that's been a big advantage for Orlando over the years, not so much this season. Defense, Miami number 8, Orlando number 13. So the Heat with offensive, defensive, and rebounding edges. And let's not forget that Orlando's mediocre numbers have come despite playing the number 27 schedule in terms of difficulty so far this young season.
Let's go to Philadelphia. The home 76ers, a 3-point favorite over San Antonio. Yeah, it is the rodeo trip for San Antonio that we talked about in yesterday's postmortem, but not really yet. They had a day off before winning at Memphis, then another day off for this setting, so there's no fatigue element out there yet. What we are seeing with the Spurs, though, and it'll be interesting to see how this holds up through the rodeo cycle, or even if Manu Ginobili disrupts it when he comes back, look at the way this defense has turned around. And as so often happens, the defense kicks in when they seemingly had hit rock bottom. They had back-to-back games against Houston and New Orleans where they had over 50% in each and over 100 points in each. And that's what Popovich said, okay, no more. That's the end of it. So after the first 18 games this year, they were allowing 96.4 points a game, 46.3% shooting. Since that bottoming out over 8 games, 87 points a game. That's a drop of 9.5, 42.9% shooting. Here's what's also real interesting. They had rematches against both New Orleans and Houston in this positive stretch. First time around, they allowed 103.5. Second time around, they allowed 89. First time around, shooting percentage, 56.6. Second time, cut down to 45.1. Much better defense being played from San Antonio. Of course, no one's been playing defense better than Philadelphia, according to the stats, and there's this continuing conundrum. Is it the schedule? Is it the quality of the team? Well, we stepped out with them on Friday, got spanked against Miami. So now we have another conundrum here. Is this just a particular matchup problem Philly has? Are they fine against everyone else? Where do we go with the 76ers these days?
Well, I mean, we certainly have to talk about the strength of schedule differential between these two teams. San Antonio ranked number 4 in the NBA in strength of schedule. Philadelphia ranked number 29. And obviously, we thought the Sixers were ready to step up against elite-level competition when we took them plus the points against Miami last week. But, you know, that came after a 16-point rout of the Bulls. But, you know, that didn't work out, clearly. But the question becomes, is maybe Miami just a team that Philadelphia can't match up again, and they can match up again, just about everybody else? Let's take a look at that graphic. This is Philadelphia versus Miami, and then versus everybody else. They played 2 games against the Heat, 0-2 straight up, 0-2 against the spread. They've lost by 41 points in those ballgames. Philly versus everybody else in the NBA, 18-5 straight up, 17-5-1 against the spread. A real moneymaker for anyone who's been consistently supporting Doug Collins' team so far this season, and outscoring their opposition by just shy of 300 points in those 23 ballgames. So, you know, you have a team that didn't play well against Miami last week, and what'd they do? They rebounded very, very strongly. Wins and covers against on the road in a kind of a tough spot against Atlanta, and then, boom, another come-from-behind, tight victory, made the plays at the end of the game to knock off the Lakers on Monday. You know, Philly, they're doing some things right now, Dave. They really are.
The one thing they are doing wrong, and maybe this is what we'll start to focus on with them, we've talked several times on Insider Six Packs about their rotation up front because of injuries. Now, Elton Brand comes back tonight. Spencer Hawes probably doesn't play. The last 3 games, 3 pretty tough opponents, the Heat, the Hawks, the Lakers, they lose the boards by 44. Can they get enough outside of that rotation inside for them to sustain, especially as the schedule gets tougher? Won't be betting the game tonight, but we'll be watching that inside matchup very closely.
When we come back, we're going to shift our focus to the college hardwoods as Money Time continues.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Let's start off in the Carrier Dome in Syracuse this evening, where the Orange, about a 9-point home favorite against the Georgetown Hoyas. And boy, it's going to be another crowd of 30,000 plus in one of college basketball's most electric venues this evening. That's the 17th time this season that Syracuse has broken the 30,000 fan mark for a basketball game. That's good attendance. But, you know, this is another series. We talked about the conference shuffles. Yeah, this one's going to get lost, too. And this has been a really compelling series for a long, long time. In recent years, there's certainly no exceptions. Now, Syracuse with Fab Melo back in the lineup, man, they have depth as good or better than any team in the country. And you combine that with 30,000 fans cheering for every play that they make, and you're going to back an opponent on this floor. You better be backing an opponent that has the metal, the toughness, the chutzpah, the, you know, your sack. You know, they got to be able to hang around.
And here's one team that can. There are several things, of course, you always look for on the road when we define someone as a tough out. But mostly we like veterans, guys that will not be fazed by that crowd. And that's something that's real nice at the top of this Georgetown rotation. You've got some underclassmen who've seen a lot in their careers. Jason Clark, Hollis Thompson, Henry Sims, 172 Big East games already. Two of them seniors, one a junior. What did they do last year on this court? They won the game outright, 64-56. Lost the rematch, 58-51. But no sort of a common theme there. Syracuse doesn't score much in either. They don't get to 60. One of the things we chart an awful lot, and we named this our French 75, sort of as a way to getting the reference point in. These are games in which neither you or your opponent score more than 75 points. Now, note that. Neither you nor your opponent. There's a key, because so many times announcers say, well, when they hold the other team to 60 or less, they win. No kidding. If the other team doesn't score many points, you got a good chance to win the game. So we're not talking about just stopping someone. We're talking about the tempo of the game itself. Slow tempos. So let's take a look at the chart and see how Syracuse has done in this category this year. First, we should note, though, if you're going to have a French 75 during the game, do it right. That is champagne, cognac, lemon juice, and sugar, not champagne and gin, which a lot of bars will, you know, try to shuffle onto you. French 75 is actually named after an old field cannon from the Napoleonic times. I want a little background on that. Al Mancini, top of the food chain here on the Vegas Video Network, had a good show about mixing cocktails, very last episode. You may want to look that one up. Anyway, that's not what you care about now. You care more about basketball. Syracuse this year, in games in which neither they nor their opponents break 75, what we call slow tempo games, only 2-7 against the spread. That's a real key for this team. Teddy talked about their depth. They run the court beautifully. But when they have to set up and it becomes a grinder, they're not nearly as effective.
No, I mean, you have to pass the ball to be successful against this Syracuse 2-3 matchup zone. Jim Boeheim's been playing the same defensive strategy for decades, and certain teams match up well against it, certain teams don't. You know, you have to pass well. Well, if you're not going to dribble penetrate, who do you need? Well, let's see. At 6'10", Sims an excellent passer. So is 6'8", Thompson. And those two, 111 assists combined between them, each with a positive assist-to-turnover ratio. Georgetown won on this floor last year, and they have the personnel, perhaps, to give Syracuse a bit of a challenge again today.
Let's go to the ESPN nightcap, and it's unique tonight in that these might be the two best rivalries in all of college basketball. Teddy, you talked about that Syracuse-Georgetown history. Now we go to Chapel Hill, North Carolina. North Carolina right now a 6-point favorite over Duke. All of 7 miles, campus to campus, between these two, and that's what juices up a rivalry. The fact that you're rivals all year long because you're playing pickup games against each other, you're getting in each other's face an awful lot. Question we have tonight, though, is Duke really prepared to step up in this rivalry setting? The chemistry we're used to seeing from Duke teams, not really there this year. Now, early in the season, we talked about personnel limitations. There also is a shuffling aspect that's not coming together. They played 8 ACC games so far. 9 different guys have at least one start. Mason Plumlee is the only one who started all 8 of those games. So now how do the pieces fit tonight against a North Carolina team that has NBA size across the board? 6'4", 6'7", 6'8", 6'11", and 7'0". They're actually taller than a few NBA teams.
Well, I mean, what's happened so far this season when Duke has tried to step up in class against on the road against teams that will most assuredly be tournament-bound come March? Well, 0-2 straight up and 0-2 against the spread. At Ohio State and at Temple, they allowed 82.5 points per game in those two contests on just shy of 58% shooting. And that includes catching Temple at the Wells Fargo Arena instead of the Leocora Center, where they normally play. So, you know, how does Duke counter for this matchup, where there are going to be size issues at every position on the floor, particularly maybe the biggest issue in defending Harrison Barnes, the Tar Heels' lottery pick, who is fully healthy and ready to go for this one? It's Coach K's conundrum. Let's take a look at that graphic and the quote from Coach K. He says, "That has been a problem for us all year. We have a small perimeter. We don't have the versatility. We either have big guys or perimeter guys. Kyle Singler, Lance Thomas, Lowell Deng, they were able to play the 3, the 4, the 5, the 2. We don't have that right now." This is from Harrison Barnes talking about the 6'4 guard that's going to try to contain him this evening. Quote, "Offensively, I like the odds of someone 6'4 going against me." You know, the question, Dave, the Tar Heels have the depth to take advantage.
Yeah, ordinarily when you talk about a Roy Williams and you think run, press, wear the other team down, but Carolina's really down to a 7-player rotation right now. They've lost a couple of key cogs, Dexter Strickland, Leslie McDonald. That bothers us a little bit. I'll tell you what else bothers us too, though. As good as Kendall Marshall is, the other guys don't find each other very well on offense. In those 8 ACC games, 76 assists for Marshall. No one else on the Carolina team has more than 10. So a defense that we believe can be broken down, will Carolina be able to? Are they going to pass the ball well enough to take advantage of those inside matchups? Do they have the depth to get out into the open court and run the way that we'd like to see them run? Yeah, we want to get to Carolina a little bit here. That's why we can't quite take it to the top. But that's okay. By the time this game tips off, we're already going to have some money in our pockets.
Absolutely. Play of the daytime, and we're going to go back to the game we talked about just a moment ago with Georgetown, a team that won straight up at the Carrier Dome last year. They're catching 9 in the rematch this time around. Georgetown has all the things we look for out of our road underdogs. They keep the pace slow, which is a problem for Syracuse, who loves to get out and run. Not as efficient in the half-court sets. Georgetown plays defense, they rebound, they pass well, and they have the experience in the metal to hang tough in a very hostile environment. Let's take a shot tonight. The Vegas Sports Day play of the day, the Georgetown Hoyas, +9 at Syracuse. That's where we're going. And that's going to wrap it up for the Wednesday edition. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. For Malinsky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the games and good luck.